fish, 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 fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Oh, good day, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and good night. Yes. That depends upon which part of the world you're listening in and whether you're awake or not. And I have decided I am not. So I am no longer going to be doing this. All you're going to hear is snoring sounds. Well, no, that's from the audience, not from me. All right. We have Fish and Frank here and Robert in a chair across from me. And we have RJ in command and control. Captain Amazing over there. So... It
Captain Amazing. You got a promotion, huh?
I did to Captain.
Nice.
Well, he is commander, you know. So, anyway, I don't know. It's been a very strange last week in going into different. You got to factor in the price of gas. You know, I'm thinking about it, there's a couple of things that have affected the fishing here recently. One was the state gave us 30 days worth of American red snapper fishing, and two, gas isn't $5 a gallon. It was just a few years ago, gas was over $4 a gallon, went up to almost $5 for a little while.
Right.
And so people weren't going 100 miles out into the Gulf or 60 miles or 40 miles out in the Gulf. When you're only getting a gallon a mile or a half gallon a mile, or if you're lucky, 2 gallons a mile, you know.
Plus, it's been water skiing material from what I've been told by several people as far as last couple of weekends out there, 40, 50 miles out, flat.
There has been flats boats out 40 miles in the Gulf.
Yeah, it sounds like retired football players to me to do that.
Yeah, they were literally out there 40-some miles. The guys were seeing flats boats out there.
Jeez.
But between the price of the gas, with gas in the $2 to $2.50 range, you know, there's a lot of people going back out into the Gulf. One of the hardest things to find now is a lot of good trolling stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because... with the price of fuel so high just a few years ago, you know, when gas was over $4 a gallon, you know, people weren't going trolling very much.
No.
They would go out and maybe bottom fish, but they didn't want to turn those motors on more than they had to. So, you know, now a lot of the stuff that used to be available, we're having a hard time finding because we need spreader bar rigs, we need umbrella rigs, we need all this stuff. And there's probably about 15% of what was available 10 years ago.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, I think it was the last part of Bush's term and the first part of Obama or the second part of Obama, I don't remember, but where it was that $5 a gallon stuff, $4 or $5 a gallon.
Yeah.
And, you know, you forget it was just a few years ago, and people just quit doing it. They were more popular on the East Coast, but it was a real small market because they don't have to go out very far to get it.
Right.
It's just funny how economic conditions, weather, open seasons, and all that have an effect on everything that goes on.
So the tackle shop stopped stocking those parts?
Yeah, because
they weren't selling.
Nobody was going out to do it. The West Coast of Florida, it was literally, if you were going out trolling, it was with small boats within a couple miles of the coast, mostly king mackerel stuff. But you could do that with a regular outboard that got several miles to the gallon, not with a big offshore boat with twin engines and, you know, you're not running out 45, 50 miles for the sailfish and the mahi-mahi and stuff that we're finding out are out there fairly regularly.
Yes.
I mean, it's pretty often. You can go out there. There's so many cool fish out there. But it's literally almost 50 miles into the Gulf.
Yeah.
Where on the Atlantic side, you can go out 3 miles, 10 miles, and guys go out with their, literally on a paddle board, paddle out and fish for sailfish.
Yeah, taking jet skis and paddle boards out to do that, that's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
But it's practical. You know, it's very capable of being done.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a few miles out, mm-hmm. so it's not like they're going that far.
And you don't have to go that far on the other coast to suddenly have 300 feet of water underneath you.
Oh, no, you go out not even a mile and you're in deep water because of the continental shelf. Just the Gulf of Mexico, from what I've heard estimated, when the asteroid that came in hit over by the Yucatan just blew a whole bunch of sand up, and there's Florida.
Yeah.
And so the Gulf is a big kind of sloping sand bowl, right. You know, versus a continental shelf and all that. It's made much more like a lake, I guess you would say.
Yeah, and there's a formula on this, on the Gulf side, for how far out you go, how deep it's going to be. And it's a pretty, the Spanish used to do that when they were going up and down, and they didn't want the pirates to see them, so they stayed far away from the coast. They knew how far out they were by the depth, how many miles. It was like 1 mile per 10 feet, something like that.
More than possible. And we know, because of the loop currents in the Gulf, that pirates did come by sort of southwest Florida, because if you were going over to Mexico and all those places, when you got done, it was actually faster than trying to cut straight across to follow the loop current up into the Gulf and come back down past southwest Florida.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to just slog your way straight across, those boats only did 2 to 5 miles an hour. And if you could get up 6-7 miles an hour with the right wind, you know, that was a big deal.
Yep.
I mean, 10 miles an hour, their hair's blowing back, and they're like, hey, dog, you know, I'm it.
There's air conditioning.
But American red snapper fishing has taken off this year like we have never seen it take off.
Right.
With some of the best fish coming in about 180 to 200 feet of water. What have you been hearing, Robert?
I've been hearing more consistent reports in that 145 to 170 feet of water. You know, but it has been all...
So I was off by 10 feet. Okay, well, shoot me. You got to be 10 feet shallower than that.
Yeah, but, I mean, in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, that can be the difference of 20 miles.
Huge difference, I get it.
But you're right, but it's been all over the map, because the guys that have been coming in have been... One guy said, well, I ran out 70 miles and didn't catch anything, came back in 50 miles and did phenomenal. And another guy tells you, well, I went to 50 miles, didn't catch anything. I had to run out 65 miles to really get into my fish.
And it's literally amazing. And a lot of them are a little north of Port Charlotte Harbor.
Yeah.
But you're out there 45 to 60 miles out, averaging 120, 140 feet of water. Now, I'm hearing that the two number one baits are squid and cigar minnows. If you can get the good Spanish sardines, that's a close second. Now, we've got boxes of ballyhoo for the guys now, too. Some of the guys are trying that. But it's a different ballgame. And the weirdest part about it is guys are trying to drop live bait on them and not doing as good as they are with the dead bait.
Yeah.
That, to me, I think, is the weirdest of all the notions, because even grouper fish, and if you can drop live bait fish down, you historically will way outfish the dead bait. But no, just regular old plain nasty squid and frozen cigar minnows.
Do we think that's a scent issue? That, you know, a dead fish obviously has more scent and more oils coming out of it than a live bait would. So you think that the red snapper are hunting by scent or being attracted by scent?
You figure with 180 feet of water, there's not going to be a lot of light down there.
No, there's not a lot of light down there. You know, and that would make very good sense. You know, it's just I honestly don't know enough about the feeding habits of red snapper to give an answer, other than that one makes by far the most sense. The only thing I do know that about red snapper from reading quite a bit about them, as far as the fishing habits of them, you know, these guys are going out there and they're drifting over these hard bottoms or motoring over hard bottoms looking for fish coming up off the bottom. You know, they're seeing on their bottom machine
a pile of fish, literally.
And a lot of times they're looking for that Christmas tree, they call it. You know, it'll just be a spike of fish. And one thing that holds consistent from what I've heard from a lot of anglers and read a little bit is the red snapper, traditionally the largest of the red snapper, will be on top of that stack. versus all of your other species, whether it's amberjack, mangrove snapper, grouper. The larger fish tend to hang on the bottom. The young, dumb, smaller fish tend to hang up on top. And it's kind of a reversal with the red snapper.
Hmm. Now, I've seen pictures of 40-inch American red snapper.
That's just crazy. And,
I mean, literally, it looks photoshopped. I mean, but why would somebody take all the effort to, you know, Photoshop it and have 10 different pictures of it on their phone?
Especially that particular person, because he's incredible.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, 40-inch, and, I mean, that's got to be 15, 18 inches tall. It's just such a crazy thing. Now, what's the shallowest we're going to find these fish? I think the reason we're talking about it again and keep going over it is it has become a craze this year.
Yeah, last year was pretty good, but this year's killing it.
Unbelievable. We sold 2 weeks worth of frozen bait in 3.5 days.
Yeah. By the way, thanks for those sardines that you ordered extra this morning. That was terrifying.
How many did we get?
13 cases.
It was supposed to be held there and us get them later.
Oh, well, I ordered the 3 or whatever to fill us up and give us some extras. No, there was 13 cases. I got them all in.
Well, we're going to have to start promoting sardines on this show today.
No. They're too hard to get. Every time a container comes in, I'm buying like 30 to 50 cases and having them held. And I can't actually say that because we're not allowed to hold. They don't hold bait for people. But I guess I am the biggest frozen bait dealer on the West Coast of Florida, so I might get a little, I shouldn't say special treatment, but I guess when you're spending that much money, they'll do extra for you. But no, they're too hard to get. These are the good, real Spanish sardines, the beautiful, big,
domestics.
Nice ones. Yeah, they're really hard to get. So... We're not going to promote them.
That was a fun jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't intentional.
I just went, oh, boy.
So, anyway, but it's become a phenomenon this year.
It is.
What's the shallowest water? 80 feet? Maybe you could find some, but you're not going to... I think legal size is like, what, 14 inches or something?
I think it's a little better than that, I think. I'd have to look it up
again.
Yeah, I
have to look it up.
But to find a legal one, I'm going to say that... Maybe 80, but realistically that...
100, 120.
Yeah, usually I tell people if they're going to attempt it, the shallowest that they need to start is 120 feet of water. And that's, like, on the very shallow end.
Now, I know guys that are doing it with 40-pound test braid, even 30-pound, mm-hmm. trying to lighten it up to get down there. And they've got 6 to 12-foot leaders on. Mm-hmm. And basically going all the way down to, like, 25 and 30-pound fluorocarbon leaders.
Yeah.
Trying to sneak those fish in. And then I got the other guys who are out there literally catching monster fish with 60-pound braid and 60-pound leader on it.
Yeah, I mean, the farther you go, the lot less pressure they get. So, you know, that's going to stand to reason with that.
So what's your favorite rig? How would you build a rig for American Red Snapper?
Honestly, I'd probably do like a chicken rig. You know, I would do my sinker on the bottom with my, you know, like a three-way swivel.
Right.
Sinker coming down off the bottom, 3 to 6 foot long leader coming off the side, and then going right to my main line. You know, that's going to be my comfort factor just because in 80 feet of water grouper fishing, I can control the line going down fairly easy with my egg sinker, so, you know, doing the typical grouper rig with your egg sinker up on top.
Which is basically like a Carolina rig. You put a sinker on your line, free sliding on the line, then tie your line to a swivel, add your leader to it, and put your hook on the end. And so you got hook, leader, swivel, and a free sliding egg sinker. Gives you a lot of feel for what's going on, keeps your bait a little bit away from the sinker, actually works out good. But has a tendency to helicopter, and if you drop it too fast, the bait acts like a parachute, slowing down, pulling line through the sinker, and then twisting everything all up in a big tangle.
Right, and which with me, once I get over that 80 feet of water, personally, because there's so many different underlying currents going down there in that depth, whether it's structure or just a thermocline in the water column, that creates weird currents. I find I get a lot more of those issues using that, so that's why I like using that sinker.
What's your
on the
rig, RJ?
I like what Robert was talking about. I usually use one of those pyramid sinkers because they drop down faster and come up to a three-way swivel. Much shorter leader, probably a 3-foot leader would be the maximum I'd do. And again, that's just like Robert says, when you drop down to that depth, things start to spin around, and the next thing you know, you think your rig is laid out just like it is in the drawing in Outdoor Life magazine, but it's actually twisted around the line, and you're not feeling what you're thinking you're feeling, and sometimes the rig doesn't work at all because everything is twisted together.
It's one of the things I tell people. We sell a little leather tab for your thumb, so if you're using a conventional reel, you just let your thumb on the spool, and when you get it free spool, and you slow it going down so that you don't get tangled up. It takes a little longer to get to the bottom, but it's better. I'd rather get to the bottom not tangled in an extra 15-20 seconds than get there 15-20 seconds earlier and be all tangled up.
Right.
Yeah, it's really take your time getting it down to the bottom, because if you hurry it up, you wasted whatever time it took to get down there.
Well, now, and then some. Yeah.
One of the things you watch for on your bottom machine going on in the Gulf right now is schools of bait fish. There's actually cigar minnows, sardines, there's thread fins, there's pinfish, there's squirrel fish out there. You literally, there's a lot of bait out in the Gulf right now that you can get live. And the live cigar minnows or live sardines are the exception to the rule when it comes to fishing these big American red snapper. If you can catch those baits live with a sabiki, now a lot of times they're hugging the bottom in 40 feet of water or more. It's, you know, you go over them, they all sound down. They usually are a surface running bait fish, but a lot of them are learning to go deep because all the ones that come up by the surface get caught, and the ones that tend to run deeper, like in the harbor with the thread fins, we get a ton of bait in the harbor that you never see anymore because it's not pushing the surface. It's going deep. And I think we've taken so many of the ones who genetically were inclined to go to the surface, leaving the ones we don't see to spawn and breed and the ones that were inclined to go deeper. I think that's one of the things. We're rapidly introducing, you know, traits to a bait fish.
Yeah.
And speaking about traits to bait fish, black drum, redfish. This has been an ongoing thing for me and Robert for years. Kind of a fascination with, we see these black drum in the canals. They don't act like a black drum. They're definitely a black drum, but the fins are a little different. The coloring's really weird. They're still 40 pounds, 60 pounds, 20 pounds, big fish. And they kind of tend to go more to the surface, but the coloring's a little off, the shape's a little off. Now, this year is the very first year I've actually got these reports. Black drum and red drum are genetically close enough to spawn. They're first cousins. Probably shouldn't do it, but it's been done, okay? So, in PGI, the guys are fishing with blue crabs, big pieces of frozen shrimp, and they're catching the black drum, and then all of a sudden, big redfish, I mean high 30-inch, 40-inch redfish, are being caught within these schools of black drum. And we're still wondering, because I haven't been able to find one to catch it and send it to the lab and see what the genetics are on it.
So we're actually seeing a cross between redfish and black drum?
I think it's very feasible, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like any other fish you get. As your numbers decrease, especially if you're a schooling fish or animal by nature where you're very sociable, as your numbers decline, you're going to find another similar species to be sociable with or protected by.
Like white baits, red fins, butterfish, skipjacks. Nowadays, not uncommon to find a school of fish with four or five species in it.
Right. Well, yellowfin, tuna, and false albacore swim together regularly now up on the northeastern seaboard. And before, they were completely segregated. Big eye tuna by themselves.
And again, by the way that fish spawn, it's hit or miss as to what egg meets what sperm.
Right.
So it is possible that you could get
the
stuff
to
mix together.
I don't know with the black drum and red drum, with the red drum being in a school, if it's exactly a not enough other species thing. We've noticed for many, many years now, big, 40-inch redfish, high 30-inch redfish, big adults, 20, 30, 40-pound fish that were here all year. Not a lot of them, but more and more numbers of them. People keep expanding out how they fish, doing fishing different areas. And all year, we seem to have a population of these big redfish, which they should not be here. They should leave once they get to be a certain size. They should get with the schools and leave. But over the years, they've dumped hatchery redfish in the harbor. And with salmon, unless you put them in the exact right place, they got to be so far up a creek or a river and then be able to run down, then they will go back to that. But if you release them at the mouth of a lake or in the middle of a lake, they never spawn. They never go back to anywhere. They don't know what to do. They've got to be at least so far up a creek or a river when they're released in order for them to kind of get that homing thing. And that could happen with redfish, because redfish are a pelagic schooling fish that run. The same redfish born in Port Charlotte could end up in Louisiana, Massachusetts, the Carolinas. They could be anywhere in the world. And I don't believe all of them come back every year to spawn. I think some of them might, but a lot of them might be every second or third year, because they have such a broad range that I can't see how, if they're all the way up north of the Carolinas, July, I better run back to Port Charlotte. It just seems like it's a little far-fetched for them to come back every year.
Yeah. It's definitely a stretch, but it honestly wouldn't surprise me, because I remember reading probably about 20 years ago where they had tagged a redfish, and in 6 weeks' time, they assumed that it probably went through the locks of Okeechobee, but it was tagged in, I think, Alabama, and 6 weeks later was caught, in northern Georgia. So I think, like anything else,
I had no idea it'd go that fast, that far.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. But you say it all the time, and a redfish swimming on average just lollygagging along at 5 miles an hour in 3 hours, he's from your house to Boca Grande.
Well, you figure if you're walking around the grocery store, you're probably walking at 3 miles an hour, 2-3 miles an hour?
Probably about 2 miles an hour.
So, I guess if you were swimming 12 hours a day, you got 24 hours in a day, they could theoretically be swimming 18 hours a day, and what's 18 times 3, but it's, quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No. So
I'm glad nobody piped in, made me feel a lot less dumb.
No, we were hanging you with that one.
Is that what it was?
If you want to do ciphering, Frank, it's up to you.
It's 54, I think.
Okay. That's 54.
54 miles in a day.
In a day.
7 days a week over 6 weeks. That's quite a bit.
That's 42 times 58. So that's 2,436 miles cruising at that speed.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So, it's not unrealistic.
So they could go 1,000 miles away and come back 1,000 in just 6 weeks.
Well, look at what monarch butterflies do. They leave from Canada and go all the way to the high alpine mountains of Mexico every winter. A butterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a normal migration for them every year.
I'm still intrigued with the idea, and I saw this. I've seen a couple of black drum caught at El Jobin. And they didn't look quite like black drum to me. And I kind of stored that in the file in the back of my head. And you guys just brought that up, that they are a little different than the standard pictures that you would see of black drum.
Well, right now I'm bringing up black drum because the schools in the harbor have been spotted again. Okay. Yeah.
So they're back.
So it's 500 to 1,000 fish that are 20 to 60 pounds, and they're schooling up like a school of bait fish. Could be just feeding, could be a pre-spawn thing, could be a spawn thing. No one actually knows why these fish are there, but you watch the surface for them, because these fish in 14 feet of water, they're stirring up mud, and yet you can still see some of them at the surface. You can see them rippling the surface, and plus you can see brown stain behind them where they're stirring the bottom up. So that's 14 feet thick of black drum.
Yeah.
And possibly some redfish mixed in with them. With these guys, they were actually using blue crabs. They were cutting them in half, bigger blue crabs, putting them on a hook, and tossing them out. They were using about an ounce weight and kind of Carolina rigged the sinker on the back, swivel, about 3 feet a leader down to a hook, hooked through a chunk of blue crab, just still fishing the bottom for them. Now, a couple of guys have been using just jig heads with the shrimp on them, but it's a little hard to get a hook set with that than right. It is more with just a hook. But all of a sudden, three or four nice black drum, and this is back on the Rim Canal in PGI, and one of the other one canals, they wouldn't tell me where it was. I said, Rim Canal? He said, no. Okay, so I got one guy to say he was in the Rim Canal.
Right.
But catching, you know, three, four black drum, and then a close to 40-inch redfish.
Wow.
Mixed in with those black drum. And if these are fish that were dropped here during one stocking program or another over the years, they may not know to leave the harbor, that, and they might be looking at these fish as the only other fish of their size. Yeah. So
he looks like me. I'm going to go over and hang out with him.
Yeah,
and he eats the same thing that I like to eat, and he feeds the same way that I do. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So I don't know. We all have no idea. All we know is there's some big black drum being caught. Huge schools out in the harbor. So when you're going from point A to point B in the harbor right now, if you're going out to the Gulf to go grouper fishing or American red snapper, heading down to Bull Bay, Turtle Bay for some snook or redfish fishing, back the throttle down a little bit and have somebody watching the water. The driver should drive the boat. You shouldn't be watching for fish. But get your buddy over there to watch the water. And if you see that school, 100% guarantee you're going to thank me if you stop.
Yeah.
You're going to just, even if you don't do anything but look at it.
Me personally, I've never been able to catch anything out of them because I just, that's my black cloud over me. But I've gotten to witness it a couple times, and it is so amazing to see, you know, 30 to 60 pound fish
over. Acting like they're 4 inches long.
Right, they're just amazing. I mean, it's cool, and the shadows and the sizes, the colors, all of it. You know, and to watch them be 6 inches under the water, but they're so big and create so much movement with their fins that they're actually swirling the water above them 6 inches to a foot under the surface and making a footprint.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive to see.
Now, out there, no sinkers or sinkers when you're throwing at them. I would just freeline a bait.
I'd be freelining it. I mean, that's
no
what
floats, no sinkers. Just put it on at the most of number two split shot, but even that's pushing it because you want it to stay into the water column, letting one of them decide if they're going to eat it.
Right.
So try and figure out direction of movement, and then throw in front of that school, and there's really good chance you get hooked up, but it's going to be a free line situation. Your line, leader, and hook.
And it's going to be a random bait, too, because the 1 year that I did it, and actually Vinny was sitting next to us.
Yeah.
And we were originally all going tarpon fishing together, and we had crabs and we had shrimp. We hadn't caught any thread fins yet or any of that. And we threw out the crabs and shrimp into them. Nothing. But we're watching these tarpon guys around us who came up on them, and they're catching them. They were catching them on thread fins, both live thread fins and cutting up thread fins. And I just never would have thought in my normal thinking of things to throw
just,
that up.
Just on a side note, a new bait in Boca Grande Pass. And you got to listen to the show to figure it out. Because I'm not talking about it. Nobody's talking about it. Peg Leg Steve had a customer in who was wanting to go out tarpon fishing. We didn't have any crabs, didn't have any of this. So he told the guy, he says, let's try this. Let's take some of those frozen thread fins we have, the big thread fins. Said, put the hook in them, run about 5 feet a leader to, you know, a couple ounces of lead, you know, to a swivel, and then put a couple ounces of lead over it. And then butterfly the thread fin and just kind of break the backbone a little bit. And they were hooking up. The guys were coming up, and Steve had told them, just say you're throwing crabs. And they were rocking it. And some of the guys who are out there all the time, names we know very, very well, had no idea what was going on and couldn't figure out how these guys were hooking up. And to butterfly it means, you know how you normally fillet a fish, you start by the head, and then you cut back towards the tail, and but this, you start at the tail and cut the thread fin towards the head, leaving the sides attached. But they kind of act like butterfly wings because they're attached by the head, but they're not attached anywhere else. They're literally, both fillets are being sliced off, but still attached. Right. And then by either using one of those tubes to remove the backbone or even just breaking it a little bit, that allows for all that action. The sides flapping together seem to be rocking the tarpon.
And that's pretty interesting.
Nobody's ever done it.
No, I mean, I've used fresh dead and even frozen thread fins inside the harbor dead baiting them, but I've never tried butterflying anything for them out there.
Yeah.
Because as much as I've butterflied for shark fishing with blue runners and ladyfish over the years, I've only hooked maybe a couple of tarpon ever on a butterflied ladyfish.
Well, I think the difference is, if you're in Boca Grande Pass, the current is strong enough to allow the sides to actually move in and out, to flap.
Yeah, no, I can absolutely see that.
If you were in a slow current area, it wouldn't matter if you cut the belly or butterflied the sides. And they call it butterflying because you've got the backbone, and then when you take the fillets out both sides, kind of like butterfly wings, you know, kind of a gross version of it, but that's how it got its name, because they're supposed to flap like butterfly wings. But because of the current Boca Grande Pass, I can see where that, having those side flaps slamming together, slapping, moving, is going to be a much more attractive bait, whereas if you're up in the harbor in the deep holes, there's not enough current to do that most days.
Right. Well, and plus you're adding a lot of scent in the water, too.
Yeah, but these are with frozen bait, not live ones, just straight out frozen bait.
You've got that visual like you were talking about earlier. You know, the you got the scent, plus you got a very small, soft-scaled fish, so you're releasing scales coming off of those fillets, you know, and the whole scent thing and the visual part of it. You kind of have that trifecta thing going on, so I could see that being pretty excellent.
That's an interesting concept too. If you're jigging over a wreck or something like that, you pull the fish up, and as it drops back down again, those flaps are going to open up.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a lot of motion, and like Robert said, you're going to get a lot of scent in the water. And again, as you get down in the deeper water, when you get around 70, 80 feet, it starts to turn blue. So the only light that's really penetrating down that deep are the blue light. And so there's a lot less going on visually for the fish and a lot more going on for their lateral line and their ability to scent things. And when you get in 100 and something feet of water, I mean, it's hardly any light down there at all. So that might be an interesting bait to try jigging over a wreck with it.
That might even be a great way to go for, like, the American red snapper.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, I think we had the thought at the same time. Yeah. With peg leg coming up, that the customers called back laughing, they were having a great time because they hooked up with all these tarpon.
Yeah.
And these guides and everybody were asking them what's going on. And I know they're too vain to listen to our show.
Right.
So I'm not worried about them finding out what was going on for this.
Cause yeah, they'll never know.
I know that they're way too vain to listen to what, you know, poor, you know, Fish and Franco, he's too crude. You know, what would he know? So
even though half of those guys, you took them to their first seminars when they became those.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so if any of you guys and girls out there try that stuff, let us know, because that's a whole interesting concept about filleting a bait. And I'm sure there's different ways to
fillet.
Reverse filleting, you know, butterflying, as you called it. There might be a couple of different ways to do that. Maybe you split the butterfly wing in half also laterally. So now you got four flappers on each side. Who knows? See, give it a try. Let us know what happens with all of that.
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting. That would be really pretty cool. Because, I mean, I do it a lot for shark fishing. You know, I use a live bait fish, dead bait fish, and butterfly. You know, I try to mix it all up.
All right. Now, I know you've been on vacation and gone a couple weeks in Costa Rica, but what the hell does this mean? Sharks, hours?
Holes. I'm sorry. I was trying to...
What does it say?
In the holes. And
oh, no, that's like Laos.
Let me see.
You're telling me that says holes? You're writing notes?
Sorry, where are my sharks?
Yeah, okay. No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to do that to you boys and girls, but, you know, he's been gone 2 weeks, forgot how to write.
Holes and Lower Harbor, but the problem was it was right as we make that turn onto Collingswood where all the bumps are at, and it gets to be real chicken scratch. It's even worse, worse than normal.
Right. All right, we'll get to that in a minute. What about Costa Rica? You were in Costa Rica for, what, 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yeah. It was pretty amazing. Got to go to some different areas. You know, every time I go there, I like to go to a couple spots that I really like, and then also try to at least see some different areas. And my girlfriend went with me, and she's never been out of the country, number one, but let alone to the jungle.
So are you going to take her on another vacation, or was this like no more?
No, we actually got along really well, so it won't be separate vacations again, I don't think.
Okay.
It turned out pretty darn good.
Now, did she get to go fishing?
Yes. Yes.
And we got a picture from her of her standing with this giant rooster fish, and then we have a picture of Robert releasing a rooster fish.
You know, and here's something funny. This is I got to tell you this, Frank, especially, because, you know, you were the first one to take me to Costa Rica. You know, my two number one fish on my list since I was a little kid was a tarpon and a rooster fish. And you made both of those absolutely possible and happen. And you taking me to Costa Rica 18, 19 years ago, and we all went as a group and we, you know, caught our fish. I caught my rooster fish, so I was totally stoked. You allowed me to go, and obviously because we all work hard at it, but you still made this possible for me to go and to take her and fulfill her number one fish. Because
that was the weirdest thing ever. Because she was telling me this yesterday. Go ahead and tell them about it. But this, it's a little goofy. I mean, because
it's very goofy.
Go ahead.
Rooster fish is number one on her.
No, that's not true. Tarpon was number one on her list, same as it was for you. Rooster fish was number two on her list, exactly what it was for you.
Right. So I got to take her out a couple years ago with Carl, and we caught her first tarpon. And now, because of you and helping and everything else and basically allowing me to do this and teach people fishing and everything, this plays a role. You play a giant role in this. I was able to take her down and watch her catch her first rooster fish. And the best part about it was is she was holding the fishing pole. We were using a live bait and just very slowly drifting / hover drifting trolling. And she got to feel the fish take the bait. She let her finger off the line because they don't have live liners down there. It's just keep the bail open, hold the line. If something hits, take your finger off the line.
Right. Hope it doesn't get cut off.
Right. It hit. It took the line. She counted to five, like they said. She closed the bail. She set up on the fish. She fought the fish all the way around the boat a couple times and landed it all on her own, you know. And it was awesome for me to see that and watch that. And, you know, of course, she caught a bigger one than me. So that does not need to be said.
Everybody who knows you, Robert, knew that was coming.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? I it didn't bother me in the slightest at all. Would I have loved to caught one that size or bigger? Absolutely. There's no question. But for me to see that and do that with her, it was just really, really awesome. You know, and that was the coolest part. And for her to hook it all by herself, nobody to hand off a rod, any of that garbage. So it's 100%, without a doubt, in her mind, her catch. You know, it's not like, well, somebody handed it off to me. I touched the leader and all that garbage.
I was talking to somebody else the other day, and they were saying, man, I went out fishing, and I literally didn't get to fish much because I was helping these guys fish, and they were catching this fish, and they were doing this and doing that. And I guess I just got so caught up in what they were doing, the excitement. I said, welcome to the next level.
Right.
Because when you're starting out, you're just trying to learn to fish.
Right.
And then you get into it, you get pretty consistent, you get these big fish, you get all that. You've got that, you've got the memories, you've got the experience. And the next level is, level three is helping somebody else do it.
Right.
And level three is, in some ways, the most rewarding of all of them. The beginner, I'm getting it, I get it done, and then now I'm helping somebody else do it. And it's pretty cool when all of a sudden, you know, they're there, they're doing it, and because it kind of feels like you did it. And,
yeah.
You know, it really...
Well, and especially because it's like you learned it from somebody. You kind of, not necessarily mastered it, because I don't like calling myself a professional, because a lot of professionals I know over the years stop learning. And I'm always learning and being taught new stuff all the time, or refreshed on stuff all the time. But to go from beginning to successful to being able to now be the teacher and watch them emulate what you were taught, and you taught them, and now watch them be successful at it, and maybe even take it to a better level than you did because of their knowledge or their just willingness to try other things. It's just so gratifying.
And that's why, boys and girls, we do this radio show every week.
Well, RJ, you're very familiar with level three. Now, mind you, that's not what it's called. It's what I call it. That's a frankism, maybe not a truism. But you're very familiar with it. And it is a very rewarding part of, you know, the fishing experience. Now, I will say, I'm way back into level two when I go someplace for the first time.
Yes.
And I'm learning something new.
I'm more like level one.
I'm going back. No, I'm hardcore to level two. Level one, you're learning, you're listening to people. Level two, it's get out of my way. I want to catch this fish. But, you know, you've been lucky enough, been there, you got your, done that, got your T-shirt, and did all that. So.
Yeah.
Hot water on the flats.
Yeah, it's 90 to 95 degrees out there on the east wall, the west wall. Basically, if you're in 3 feet of water or less, you're hitting 90 degree plus water.
That's the water temperature?
Yeah, the surface
temperature.
About all we ever get is surface temp, because that's where the boat thermometers are, right on the hull, within 6 inches of the surface. Surface temperature in the harbor can vary 6-8 degrees a day. But once it's up into the 90s, that is bait killing, because where does your live well pull the water from? Same depth of water as your depth finder thermometer thing.
Yeah. So, you know, hot water is little to no oxygen. And you get over 75 degrees, your oxygen level drops significantly.
Now, everybody always asks me, what's the best tide to fish? Now, 3 months ago, I'm saying it doesn't matter because the water's the same, coming in, going out. It matters now.
Absolutely.
Incoming tide is your buddy, your pal. Your best fishing is going to be on the incoming water. Simply stated, the harbor, the canals are the hottest water. The harbor is hot. And the Gulf of Mexico is cooler water. Cooler, saltier water coming in. The Peace River is running about between 5 and 6 foot. It's probably about at 7 foot right now. A lot of water coming down the Peace River, putting brown into the harbor. The brown water of the river is much warmer than the water in the harbor. And then if you get out in the Gulf, it's much cooler. It's several degrees difference. That can make a big deal, not only on the fish, but especially on their food. You know, that cooler, saltier water comes in, gets those small little critters, gives them a whole burst of energy. They start going around to do stuff, and everything comes to eat them while they're going about their daily business. You know, being a marine creature kind of sucks. It's like, you know, eat, sleep, and try not to get eaten.
Yeah, anywhere on the bottom of the food chain, whether you're in the water or on land, is a drag.
Yeah, it's tough.
You know, but pay attention to your bait. Don't get too carried away with getting too much bait, and watch where you're going. As that water temperature comes up, you got to pay attention. But also, that being said, let's say you're catching snook or redfish in that same area. You need to take that extra minute to resuscitate that fish also, because they're exerting a lot of energy, and you brought them up into less oxygenated water. You might have caught them in 3 feet of water, but you fought them in a foot of water at the surface all the way back to the boat for a minute or two.
This is the hardest time of year to catch and release fish, because catching them can be, you know, I think it's good for the fish. Mm-hmm. Gives them a little aerobics workout, you know, you get them up, take the hook out, they go back, they're happy, you know, but, you know, not if you're going for dinner, but if you're going out catch and release, then I think it's healthy and happy for a fish. You know,
There's
many poor fish out there. There are fish, literally, boredom. I mean, they've got tears of boredom in their eyes. These fish are lonely. These fish are, they don't know what to do with themselves. They are on the verge of mental illness. They need recreation. They need entertainment. You need to go out and get fish. Donate to my cause. I will make sure that these fish get the help they need, the mental clarity, the excitement, the adrenaline of the catch and release experiment. Let's bring on the happy fish. We need this. So anyway, when you're going on, you got tarpon in the holes out there in the harbor. What? What was wrong?
You just destroyed the two of us with that.
What was wrong with that?
Nothing.
I feel bad for the fish.
Okay. Apparently you do.
All right. There's snook on the beaches, right, Robert?
Yeah, there's a lot of snook on the beaches. Since that full moon came through in June, you know, that's usually their first spawn that they do.
I got to learn to do that at the beginning of the show when people are still interested, not after I bored them for 40 minutes and they're not here anymore.
Right. The snook go out there to the beaches and the offshore spots to spawn on that full moon in June, so a lot of them boogied out there in the last 2 weeks, so now that they're done spawning, now they're going to replenish their nutrients that they use to create their eggs and their sperm. So there's a good amount of fish feeding right along the shoreline, along the beaches, from basically, I heard some reports from Sanibel all the way up to Sarasota, even like Turtle Beach and along the intercoastal there. They're starting to get some really nice snook up in there. You know, obviously, Venice Inlet is a really good spot up there at the jetties. But early morning bite has been really good on them, or evening right at sunset. You know, there's no better reason to go to the beach this time of year than to go at like 5, 6 o'clock and catch that last 2 hours of sunlight when the sea breeze is just starting to die off, the sun's going down low enough, so it's still a nice little cooler, relatively speaking. But those fish start to really get excited about going into a good feed, so you know, try that, and then your larger fish have been hanging around in the pass itself for a lot of them. So the closer you get to the passes, it seems where you're finding some of those bigger females, but a lot of your smaller males and a few big females are cruising the beach.
What's going on in deep holes in the harbor?
Tarpon. Tarpon started to move in the last several days.
We're talking about the 20-foot hole, the middle hole, and the Pirate Harbor hole.
Yes.
All of them have...
Yeah. All of them, I'm starting to get some mixed reports from people on them. They just started moving in there on Saturday. Carl first, then Richie, and then Rick.
What's your best bet to catch a tarpon in the holes?
Ladyfish, if you can find them, which has been really hard, but bait busters. Bait busters are king right now. This is that time of year when the bait busters are going to be your best friend for artificial-wise, and then for natural bait-wise, thread fins, if you can find the bigger thread fins. And from what I'm hearing, they're starting to move in, but like you were talking about, they're staying down deep. So guys are actually blind casting with their cast nets out there in anywhere from 7 to 20 feet of water and letting it sink right to the bottom to pick those up.
Yeah. Now, the good thing is they're bigger baits. You can get a half-inch, 5/8-inch square, you know, 1-inch stretch And you won't kill those fish. They're bigger baits. But God forbid you throw in a school small bait.
Yeah.
You never lift it out of the water.
Yeah.
But the bigger the holes in the mesh, the faster it sinks.
Yeah.
The less of a parachute it is. We actually have cast nets with 3/16 mesh. We have, you know, the 1/2 inch, 5/8, 3/8, 1/4 inch, and 3/16. That's tiny. But if you were to throw that in 8 feet of water, it would take a day to get to the bottom. You know what I mean? It's really... But if you're throwing it back on the flats, you could actually catch glass minnows with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You could throw it on school glass minnows and actually come up with very few gilled glass minnows.
Yeah.
How far out are the mangrove snappers, the yellowtail snappers, lane snappers?
20 to 30 miles. Getting some really good reports on those. There's been some really big yellowtail out around the Captiva Blue Hole, the Pegasus, and the Mohawk, which is about, 28, 30 miles out of Boca Grande Pass. And then anywhere from 20 to 30 miles straight out or north of Boca Grande Pass for the big yellowtails. 2 to 4 pounders. Some guys are getting some 5s and 6s, but they're kind of not real specific on their distance.
Best bait for them?
Honestly, the glass minnows and the silver sides frozen are working real good, and also frozen shrimp. But you got to chum a lot. Hanging a chum bag over and even using some of the glass minnows and silver sides mixed into that chum, free line and a bait out. It's pulling those big mangs and yellowtail right up to the surface for you.
Yeah, that would almost where I have a chum chopper or something where I could, you know, have it on the back of the boat and just not be throwing down whole ones if I could cut them in half somehow. But there's, like, in a handful, there's 1,000 little bait fish.
Yeah.
So, you know, how are you going to cut all that up?
No, I'm not messing with that. I might probably just sit
Ron
there
Popeil, pocket chopper.
Yeah, you there
know,
you
you're
go.
A food processor of the fishermen.
Right, okay. Exactly. You know, it's been pretty good out there with all that. So, you know, take it.
Shark fishing. Where's the shark fishing?
In the lower 20-foot holes. Having better luck with those down there in the Pirate Harbor hole. And then from there out through Boca Grande Pass, been hearing some good reports of the 3 to 6 foot sharks.
Okay, boys and girls. And just remember, there are lonely and bored fish out there. These fish need your help. Please, donate now. Donate to me. I will go out. I will keep these fish from being bored. I will make them happy fish. We will give them exercise. We will give them entertainment. We will do all that. It's Fish and Frank, Robert in a chair across from me, and RJ in command and control. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. And I really don't know where it all comes from. But thank you again. We will catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.